This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. Missouri Children's Division is arguably the most challenging and challenged state government agency. Children's Division oversees Missouri's foster care system and investigates allegations of child abuse and neglect. For years, it struggled with high turnover, massive caseloads for investigators, and arguably inconsistent rollouts of some key legislative initiatives. In the past year, Children's Division faced heightened scrutiny for missing warning signs of abuse and neglect. A startling 2024 report showed that investigators missed evidence of parental use of fentanyl before their kids died of accidental overdoses. And yesterday, Department of Social Services Director Jessica Bax released documents showing that investigators responded multiple times to the home of a Fredericktown couple before a four-year-old child died last year. But child welfare advocates were pleased when Bax and Governor Mike Kehoe chose Sarah Smith to lead the state's Children's Division. Smith was previously in charge of overseeing the Children's Division Child Abuse Hotline and has worked in various capacities at the agency over the years. Smith joins us from Jefferson City to talk about her plan to keep Children's Division on the right track, especially with a less robust budgetary environment than years past. Director Smith, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you for having me.
You've worked in the Children's Division in various different jobs, with everything from overseeing the hotline to working as a frontline investigator. What do you see as the biggest thing holding the agency back from operating at its full potential?
I feel like stability of leadership is a big piece of that, because it takes a while to create change across an agency that is around 1,900 team members across the state with different multidisciplinary teams in every circuit, and really to be intentional about working with those teams, the multidisciplinary teams from each circuit, and getting on the right path to ensuring child safety. I mean, really creating that culture and change. I think I've been with Children's Division, like I said, around 20 years. And in that time, I was trying to count back and see I've had at least 9 directors. And so, some directors come in with really big plans of things to do, and it just shifts the pendulum very quickly one way or the other. And so that's hard for the workforce to know where to pick up and what to do.
Right after the 2024 election cycle, I was talking with Senate President Pro Tem Cindy O'Loughlin about some of her future priorities. And she had this statement about Children's Division that really caught my attention, and I want to play for you right now.
It's easy to be on the outside of something and think, okay, I'm watching from the outside and I feel like I would do this or that and I would do differently. I'm not totally on the outside because I am in the legislature, and I have been a foster parent and I've been involved with the Children's Division and children's issues. I would tell you that I feel the entire system has failed. I know that is a big statement, but I think that the courts have failed. I think the guardian ad litems have failed. And I think that that system needs an entire reboot. It needs to be, people need to sit down, think about the outcomes they're trying to achieve, and figure out a way to get there. Because the reality is, we have twice as many people in foster care as other states our size, and there's just no excuse for that.
That was Senate President Pro Tem Cindy O'Loughlin of Shelbina talking with me last year about Children's Division. A couple of questions on this. Do you agree with Senator O'Loughlin that Children's Division needs a reboot and needs to be restructured significantly?
You know, I've had the opportunity to sit down with Senator O'Loughlin a couple of times, and I appreciate her transparency, and I try to return that as well. I consider our legislative, the legislature partners to us, and they've given us a lot of tools to be able to use to keep kids safe, and that's appreciated. And so I do think that in some areas we can definitely strengthen our multidisciplinary teams to have a network to keep kids safe, and that we have some work to do at Children's Division, but I think we have the right people in the right places right now to really impact change and drive that work.
In the past few years, Children's Division officials faced major staffing shortfalls. There was a point in the St. Louis office in 2023 where there were 16 child abuse investigators when there should have been 60. That situation improved last year, but how would you say staffing levels are both in the St. Louis region and around the state, especially when it comes to child abuse investigators?
Sure. St. Louis right now has they're 89% staffed. And so we also have put in place a recruitment and retention specialist that came on board that is specifically for the St. Louis region. And so they are doing interviews every week and looking at trends on retention and ideas for recruitment. And so we also have new leadership in St. Louis that has a lot of experience in another region that she has, you know, kind of transferred over there, and she has really great outcomes, ideas, and so we're excited to have her in the St. Louis region.
That staff shortage in the St. Louis office spawned a huge backlog of unfinished child abuse and neglect cases, and last year staff levels were high enough to wipe out that backlog. Has Children's Division been able to prevent itself from having those same type of backlog problems either in the St. Louis office or elsewhere, let's just say in the past year or so?
Sure. And this is something that, you know, in my first 30 days, I really wanted to assess where we are statewide with overdue reports, because to me that is providing families closure in a timely manner, providing them outcomes, and making sure that we're making sure that kids are safe. And so kind of that overdue number right now statewide is around 1,400 reports. Approximately. And so some of those might be for a delayed conclusion. They're working with law enforcement. There's some things going on there. And so around 1,400 statewide, specifically in St. Louis, there's around 370. That number changes daily, but around 370 that are in the backlog. So I know that that's a top priority, as well as, you know, just kind of looking at the structure in St. Louis for the new leadership there.
For context, at its height, there were over 7,000 unfinished cases that had not been closed after, I think, 45 days or more in St. Louis alone in the beginning of 2024. So I want to provide that context for people to explain that, like, 300, while you might want to get that down to zero, is not 7,000. I not really a question, more of an observation, but I do want to give you a chance to respond to that point.
Right. I mean, I remember reading kind of the stories. I wasn't at Children's Division in 2023 when those numbers were reported. I think it was, you know, over 6,000 just in St. Louis, 10,000 statewide. And so to me, that isn't a very important number to look at, but also out of that number, how many kids have we seen? And so to me, you know, that backlog number is important to know and to keep an eye on. But moving that needle forward, are we seeing kids timely and when we should? And so that's an important metric out of that backlog that our team is specifically pulling out and keeping a pulse on.
Governor Mike Kehoe and a number of other lawmakers from both parties have told me they support increasing the starting salary for child abuse investigators and other Children's Division personnel. But that doesn't appear to be happening in this year's budget, which admittingly is less robust than years past. As we'll talk about, like, there's not a situation where Children's Division workers are getting no raises under certain circumstances. But how are efforts to raise the starting salary for Children's Division workers going to affect efforts to solve a lot of Children's Division's endemic problems?
I mean, I think that we come, you know, that Children's Division team members have received, several pay increases over the last few years. And we're very thankful, for those raises for the team members that are doing this work. And so we're very appreciative of that. In the space for some, because I've been here 20 years, we've been through a lot of years where there haven't been pay increases. I think alongside that, though, it's like, how are we doing the work and what other ways are we looking at the work differently? And so there are some things that I have in mind to kind of help our teams, boots on the ground in the field, such as we're going to be bringing up a critical incident unit that will take the fatalities and near fatalities off of the frontline staff. And so that will be a team that will specifically be trained and respond to those more critical cases after something has happened and been reported. And so additionally, we're looking at some potential supports after hours, some after hours work, specific workers for 4 to midnight, overnight. I mean, we have team members on call all the time, and so creating a culture that has a better, more supportive work-life balance, I think, can't be measured in dollars. And so we're really excited to look at those pieces of the work differently and take some of those hard things and spread those out around trained individuals.
I do want to go back to the backlog for a moment, because we can talk about numbers and we can talk about the numbers getting better. But can you speak to what the human impact is if an investigator cannot close a case in a timely manner because they have too many cases on their plate? What could be the effect on actual families and kids if they're not able to figure out what's going on in a timely manner?
Yeah, I mean, closing the cases is critical because that's showing, one, it's, like I said, giving families closure, but also when it gets to the point of closure, a supervisor should be walking alongside a team member throughout the process. But really making sure that, with that kind of turnover rate that we were talking about, I think Children's Division still has around a 26% turnover rate, specifically on the front line. Those that are doing this work and closing these cases is still around 41%. And so that look and support from a supervisor is critical. And so if we're, waiting to close cases and people aren't having eyes on, then kids are potentially left unsafe and families aren't receiving certain services that they needed. So we need to be making sure that we're closing those and that we have adequate staffing to do that.
And going back to the pay issue, you are correct that in the last few years, the salaries for the starting salaries for an investigator of child abuse and neglect has gone up pretty significantly to around the $30,000-ish level to, as of now, I think about $45,000 a year. But I think that the issue that I have and other legislators have been honing in on is there are other states that offer in the $70,000 range. There are schools and hospitals that could have similar jobs that could pay more. Not to be myopic about this, but is that going to be a long-term problem to get that 41% turnover number down to a level where you're not having to hire new people and retrain them for this really important and difficult work?
I mean, I do think pay is part of retention. And so we have the career ladder here, which I think is an incentive for team members to kind of work up as they start as a potentially children's service worker 1, then a 2, then a 3, then a 4. I mean, so there is some opportunity for growth throughout the division. But, I mean, pay is a part of it, along with, like I mentioned, a good work-life balance, as well as support and training. Those are things, in my first 30 days, I asked for the exit surveys. And adequate training is something that I saw time and time again, and that is a top priority for us, to make sure that our team members are supported and trained to do this hard work. And so overwhelmingly on the exit surveys, those are things that I saw was it really focused around the training.
I'm talking with Sarah Smith, the new director of Missouri's Children's Division, which oversees the state's foster care system and investigates instances of child abuse and neglect. I'd like to recognize that the next part of today's conversation will involve details that may be upsetting to some people listening. We are going to talk about some details relating to the death of a child, which is going to take us about 5 minutes or so. Child abuse investigation records are typically not accessible to the public, but they can be if the Department of Social Services director decides to make them available under certain circumstances. Yesterday, I received documents related to the death of a 4-year-old boy in Fredericktown, Missouri. I'm curious, why did the Department of Social Services decide to release these documents?
I mean, I feel that in talking with Director Bax, something that we're very aligned with is transparency. I mean, and so if we are able to share something, we're going to share that. Kids are embedded into our communities, and if there's a request for something and if there's an opportunity for us to learn for something or even a tragedy such as this, especially a tragedy such as these fatalities, we should be transparent and, you know, really make sure that the community knows that we're here and that we are partners with them.
For context, I requested records of some higher profile child fatality cases after reading the 2024 report showing that Children's Division personnel missed warning signs parents were taking fentanyl before their children died of overdoses. And I wanted to see if there were similar scenarios in non-drug-related child fatalities. And in this instance in Fredericktown, my suspicions were somewhat confirmed. Children's Division was called 4 times before this child died. First, when this child was born in 2019 because of concerns the mother had substance abuse problems. Another time in 2021 for unsanitary living conditions, illegal substance use, and poor hygiene for the child. Another time in 2022 when the child accidentally ingested medication and there was evidence of marijuana use. And then a 4th time in 2023 over concerns over marijuana use and potential physical abuse by this mother's boyfriend. It doesn't appear Children's Division made efforts to remove this child out of the home, which, as we'll discuss, is not something they have the unilateral power to do. But I would like to know what happened here, because from looking at these documents, there were missed opportunities to remove this child before this child tragically died. And I would like to know what happened.
So I think that the opportunity for just a couple of things. So we every day receive a listing of child fatalities. All of the leadership team daily at Children's Division gets that list, and we're reviewing any fatalities because the hotline is really the gate for anything to be reported involving a fatality. So those natural passings of children, as well as child abuse and neglect fatalities. And so what you're outlining around multiple calls involving a family is something that, you know, immediately we're assessing. And I'm, you know, 30 days in and digging into these fatalities and really looking at those. That's not something that I previously had access to. And so that's a top priority, is to look at that. You know, was there anything that was missed? We're going to be doing an internal audit of, in 2022, I believe, we brought up a safety assessment tool that was, you know, kind of brought up by Children's Division and OSCA, Office of State Courts. And so we're going to be looking at that safety assessment tool. I mean, I think the fentanyl pieces, I had a chance to look through that report. That's something that really came about more so after that tool was developed. And so is there an opportunity to, we should be continually looking at tools that our team members are using and adjusting them if, you know, it's not meeting the needs and not ensuring safety of kids. And so we need to be looking at that tool and looking at a case review that we're going to do internally, kind of an internal audit of cases across the state that we determined for one reason or another using that tool were safe, and then they had another call to the hotline or a fatality, and really looking at the gaps. That's a top priority for our leadership team coming in.
And what I was alluding to earlier is that if a child abuse investigator finds evidence of abuse or neglect, they have to either call law enforcement and or a juvenile officer. And a juvenile officer is the person that then asks a judge to remove somebody from the home or not. That's what I was referring to when I said investigators don't have unilateral power. Is one of the things you're going to look for in this situation is whether law enforcement or the Madison County Juvenile Office was ever contacted about these four calls that I detailed in the previous question.
Yes, that is something just across the board. Going back to that multidisciplinary team, it's where are they working well and where are we having some gaps? I mean, and to your point, I have done some initial data pulls over the last 30 days, and one piece that I found very interesting was that our referrals to the juvenile office as a division over the last 3 years have dropped over 2,000. And so that's a very concerning metric for me coming in is, why did our referrals drop so drastically over the last few years? Because that means, you know, our team is assessing that kids are safe, not referring over to the juvenile office. And our bottom line isn't the number of kids that are in care. Our bottom line is child safety.
I'm just going to be very honest with you. Your predecessor, Daryl Missy, who was the head of Children's Division for 3 years, did not have a particularly good relationship with the juvenile officer community. And I'm not going to go into detail why. You can read other coverage about it. But like in a report looking into child deaths due to fentanyl overdoses, one of the findings was that communication between juvenile officers and Children's Division personnel needed to be better. And with that statistic that calls to juvenile officers had gone way down, my follow-up question to that and also my question about what was happened in the past is, what's being done to increase communication between juvenile officers and Children's Division?
I mean, having done this work for 20 years in Children's Division, juvenile officers are a huge part of and a partner to us. They are a vital piece in keeping kids safe, and we should be looping them in and making referrals when we have concerns about child safety. We should be working together as a team, and I consider them just invaluable in the process. And so I am very hopeful and I think I have a good team that has some background in juvenile office work and relationships with the juvenile office officers statewide, and so we're really excited for the opportunity to make sure that those relationships are strong. And because of those strong relationships, kids are safer.
One of the other findings of the aforementioned 2024 fentanyl report was that Children's Division wasn't consistent with following through with a program that sends parents to drug rehabilitation programs and children to stay with relatives. It was particularly sparsely used in St. Louis because of staffing shortages, and I am interested to know if that situation has stabilized now that St. Louis's staffing situation, as you mentioned earlier, has improved quite a bit over the past year.
So, and I think you're referring, and correct me if I'm wrong, but for the temporary alternative placement agreements, the TAPA tool that the legislature has given us a few years ago.
Yes, that is exactly what I was referring to. I referred to it in a more general way because acronyms can be confusing to people, but
yes,
continue.
Yes. And so I did have a chance to look at some of those numbers, and kind of onboarding the new leadership there that has just started. I was curious on those numbers because I think it's a great tool. I think it's underutilized statewide. And so I was very surprised in the numbers that I pulled. So when I looked at the St. Louis region as a whole for TAPA, there were just 30 last year, calendar year. And so the state as a whole had over 1,600. And for the volume of reports that are going to St. Louis, I would expect that number to be higher. And so far in 2025, they have 23. And so that's a key metric and practice piece that I know that, we've already flagged for the new leadership there, and she is diving into that.
Yeah, because I actually spoke with somebody who went through a temporary alternative placement agreement in Franklin County, which is outside of the St. Louis office. And she said to me that TAPIS was a lifeline because it not only gave her help to overcome her drug addiction, but it also provided counseling for her children and also services for the children who had to go stay with relatives. So we talked about the human aspect of it, of this earlier. I want you to kind of touch on why TAPIS could be really helpful to both parents who are addicted to drugs and also children who have to be temporarily separated from parents.
I mean, with the TAPA and utilizing this tool, we have the opportunity to link families with services like the example that you gave, and just make sure that the safety threats that were there before the TAPA was put in place have been removed, and set that family up for success without bringing a child into care. And they are staying in their community. They still have support. And so it's really, I don't know why it's not being used. And so I'm very interested to dive in and see the reasons why, specifically the St. Louis region, because it doesn't match with Jackson. I mean, when I look at Jackson County, that's similar in some ways. I mean, they had 169 TAPAs last year. And so for St. Louis to only have 30, that's a big difference. And so, it is a tool we should be using, and excited to see how we can make that more of an option for families in St. Louis.
Sarah Smith is the director of Children's Division, which oversees Missouri's foster care system and investigates allegations of child abuse and neglect. Director Smith, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Today's episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum
and Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering by Emily Woodbury.
Podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.